Blog Talk Radio. But I think we've given ourselves enough to think about for one evening. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Okay. My purpose in playing these were multiple. However, I wanted to get your attention. I hope these audio portions of these videos have done that. And so you can see the role that astrology plays in its ability to predict the future. And I won't say specific events, but it predicts energies. I've never liked to use astrology for the purposes of saying this will happen, that will happen, et cetera, et cetera. But what you're dealing with are generally are energies that will point to a particular direction, and that's how you should always view this. There's always been this deal of, oh, well, don't go outside today because, you know, it's my horoscope says.
Blog Talk Radio.
But I think we've given ourselves enough to think about for one evening. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Okay. My purpose in playing these were multiple. However, I wanted to get your attention. I hope these audio portions of these videos have done that. And so you can see the role that astrology plays in its ability to predict the future. And I won't say specific events, but it predicts energies. I've never liked to use astrology for the purposes of saying this will happen, that will happen, et cetera, et cetera. But what you're dealing with are generally are energies that will point to a particular direction, and that's how you should always view this. There's always been this deal of, oh, well, don't go outside today because, you know, it's my horoscope says, you know, this, that, and the other. Of course, first of all, that's sun sign astrology, which is a bunch of hooey. And second of all, that's you can't predict events. So had I known that there was going to be a robbery at the Starbucks I went to, I would not have probably gone. But then again, these things happen whether you want them to or not. So had I not gone to Starbucks, what would have been the alternative? Just like the guy that I was talking about in the first show who had died on the day that he was scheduled for execution on death row in Texas. And so, anyway, there you have it. I have other comments that I will probably wind up making on these videos in my next show, but I'm going to go ahead and close this out at this time, and we'll pick up where we left off on Friday, and hopefully we will have all of the Skype issues worked out at that time. So anyway, what happens if we don't prevail over these tyrants? I'm going to close out with my usual final thoughts. The truth is hate only to those who hate the truth. A noble society is not ruled by might, but by law. Preserving your culture isn't hate. It's about survival. You do not have the right to never be offended. The fact that they want your guns is all the more reason to have them. There are no illegal guns, only illegal gun laws. Anti-gun is anti-white. Anti-Semitism is a disease. You catch it from Jews. Free men aren't equal, and equal men aren't free. Odin demands that you grow the fuck up. Distinct peoples have a right to remain distinct. Multiracialism is not self-government. Forced association isn't freedom. 1488. So until next time, hail Satan. Okay, that was the end of show two. I don't know why that did not go into the archives. When these shows go over 2 hours, it is supposed to continue recording, and then whenever you listen to it, you catch everything, even if it goes over 2 hours. Blog Talk is screwing up tonight. This is what it says at my top of my browser. It says we are experiencing a major outage that could last a few hours. If you have a show scheduled for tonight, we recommend rescheduling your show to a later date. We apologize for the inconvenience of the interruption to your service. Thank you, Block Talk Radio team. Well, anyway, I'm trying to continue on, and hopefully the rest of this show will go okay. So I'm going to go ahead and begin show 3 as scheduled, and hopefully this will go into the archives, so you will need to try and catch the show in the archives for the end of it. If it doesn't, I'll have to do the same thing for the next show. Put the end of show 3 in front of show 4 and have to go into another one. Now, on Renegade, I'm doing my show 5 on Sunday night. So, anyway, hopefully the rest of this will go okay. I'm going to start show 3 now.
Log Talk Radio.
Hopefully you can hear me now. Let me see if the people in the chat can hear me. Okay, test 1, 2, 3. Let's see here. Someone's sending me a message. Let me check that out. All right, we're good. Okay, could someone type in the chat where it was that I left off when you last heard me talking, please? Does anybody know where it was? That would certainly help me out so I can make sure I get all the information out tonight. Anybody? Okay. Never heard me. All right. Well, we'll start from zero then. Then let's let me go back to my notes. Never heard me. Well, that was Tool, The Grudge. I highly recommend everybody look up the lyrics to that song because it was about transiting Saturn. I will be discussing a little bit about Saturn tonight, but only a little bit, as much can be looked up on the net, in particular the Saturn return. Just take your browser and enter Saturn return, and you'll see all kinds of stuff coming up. And Tool is a very interesting band. They're into Enochian magic and alchemy, which I think is shows up very much in their work. Anyway, again, welcome everybody to a special edition of the Dragon's Lair. Looks like we're having glitches tonight. And this is on Renegade Broadcasting, the best source of factual information on the planet. So hopefully I'll still sound a little better than I did when I was on my regular phone line. I'm now on a headphone to my phone line, and the quality may need to be improved just a little bit, which I can do. And I'm going to attempt to do that here in just 1 second. In the meantime, let's see here. For the record, today is April 12th, 2013, on our screwed-up Christian calendar. The sun is at 22 degrees Aries. Let me make a quick adjustment here on my adapter to increase the bandwidth slightly and hopefully improve the sound quality some. Okay, and we're done with that. Now let me get back to my notes. Okay, be sure and give a listen to all the other hosts here on Renegade. Until further notice, we have Kyle on Mondays, and I want to welcome Dana from Truth Militia, who will now be on Tuesdays. Lou is on Wednesdays. Mike is on Thursdays. Siegfried is on Fridays. The Roundtable on Saturdays, and me, of course, on Sundays. I will not monitor the chat. As usual, I may glance at it during music breaks, and I'll be drinking my water and smoking and here where I'm sitting, and there'll be some occasional pauses, perhaps, for some coughing. We have a chat at renegadebroadcasting.com and hopefully a live feed there. You can also go to renegadebroadcasting.chatango.com. And over at alternativesocial.com, there is the same chat over there, which is a social network created by Kyle for critical thinkers. If hopefully everybody listening is a critical thinker, you need to join the social network. And I also want everybody to be able to also go to nationalprotectionism.com. And if you're not active, then become active. Again, I have no personal website or blog as of yet. We'll see. I may one day. I would probably not have a life if I did, between doing these shows, work, and other stuff going on. I don't know about calls tonight. We'll see. We've already had a glitch here, and I don't know if I want to risk doing that. However, it should not be a problem. A lot is going to be just basically how things time out on everything. I'm going to have some audio portions of some videos to play. I want everybody to know that there's more than just one or two astrologers out there that are saying the same thing, and this is not just some, oh, well, he said this, and that's it. Nobody else is saying it. So I also, even though I'm on a phone, should have a mute button so I can cough, which I need to do right now, so I'm going to mute. Okay, I'm back. Now, if you want to write me, you can reach me at magus_18@geocities.com. That's magus_18@geocities.com. If you want to subscribe on my e-list, just write subscribe, the subject, or just write me. I like getting emails. I can't always guarantee I can get back to everyone, though. Now, if you are on my list, you have received some promised mailings. However, I will say this. I am planning on doing a fourth astrology show on my usual time slot on Sunday. And when I do and I complete that show, I will send out links to all of these videos that I have been playing here so everybody can refer to them. So anyway, my cat is outside. I think she's in heat. I'm going to go ahead and play another song, and we'll get into this in just 1 second.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm back. That was Jimi Hendrix, Born Under a Bad Sign. Now, there really aren't no bad signs, but, you know, it's urban legend. So, anyway, good music. That was his version of it, and there are several of them out there. So, anyway, right. Now, one thing I wanted to mention here, everybody was informed last week that the during the American Revolution that Pluto was in Capricorn. And what you had at that time was a slow buildup and then sort of an eruption. And it all started in 1760 when the colonies were prohibited from using any colonial script as money. And as Ben Franklin wrote, that was ultimately what initiated the American Revolution. Now, of course, that's a pretty long period of time from 1760 to the time of the Declaration of Independence in 1776. And I believe it was in 1777 that Pluto actually moved into the next sign, which is Aquarius, that follows Capricorn. And the Constitution was assembled with Pluto in Aquarius. Now, I just thought I would mention that because that's, I believe that is of some interest. And I'm going to play a couple of videos here shortly, and you'll understand why I'm saying that at this point. Now, I've got some notes here on Pluto that I'm going to read. They're real short. I mean, I have some other stuff that I'm going to read at some point, but I'm just going to kind of play this by ear between this show and my next show. And this is written by the guy that you heard last week, and he had posted some of this stuff up on his videos. And he had also done, he's also doing like a monthly chart and then commenting on it, and then he posts his comments on that. And so, but I'm not going to play those. Let me go ahead and read this here. And by the way, I want to make sure that I want everybody to understand that this is not all just about Pluto and Uranus. Neptune is out there too, and I'm going to discuss that shortly. From an individual point of view, Pluto's movement into Sagittarius, which was the sign that it was in before it moved into Capricorn, relative to Neptune and Uranus moving into Aquarius. Now, Neptune is moved out of Aquarius and into Pisces. We'll get to that shortly. And Uranus, of course, has moved into Aries. Anyway, from an individual point of view, Pluto's movement into Sagittarius relative to Neptune and Uranus moving into Aquarius will correlate to many interesting dynamics. One of these will be the progressive actualization on each individual's personal truth relative to rebelling or liberating from religious, societal, and parental conditioning patterns to conform. Within this, any of us who have been or are wearing false masks or personas that hide who we really are will experience inner and outer dynamics that will remove these false masks. Our actual reality of truth will be revealed. This has created problematic situations in terms of our existing intimate relationships, friendships, and in our professional relationships. This has been a time of increasing restlessness, as the inner impulse or desires to grow increases in intensity. This inner restlessness will manifest as an external restlessness. Now, I think we can kind of see that, as in particular people like us who are in tune to what's going on in the world. Now, historically speaking, the last time Pluto moved into Sagittarius, when Neptune and Uranus also moved into Aquarius, directly correlated with the beginning of the revolution in human consciousness that is known as the Renaissance. This revolution reflected a drastic change from church and God as all-powerful to humanism. It also directly correlated and manifested as the beginning of the discipline we now call natural science, the observation of nature and its natural laws. My view of this same cycle, again, and I'm saying this right here, is not the other guy that wrote this stuff. My view of this same cycle, again, is that we will now shift from humanism to a focus upon natural laws as our teachers leading the way. Now, these are not the same natural laws per se as you have heard from Mark Passio. Now, some of them are maybe the same, but anyway. Now, I wanted to read a couple of more of these here. This one he had posted on December 19th of last year. Let me get this cigarette lit. For several years, we have been on an astrological roller coaster ride, veering from upset to upset. Powerful and disruptive transformative energies poured into our lives again and again from different sources, different directions. It was all we could do to figure out what was happening from month to month. Now we have settled into a more stable but highly energetic astrological pattern. For the foreseeable future, these monthly charts that he's doing will have slight variations on the chart for the winter solstice, the end of the Mayan calendar, et cetera, et cetera. And he's talking about this particular video that he did in January. He said it is the first effort to come to terms with the meaning of this complex and subtle but persistent structure that will be shaping our affairs for some years to come. Now, I will be sending out the link to this after my next show, and you'll be able to go back in there and look at some of these other videos that he's done. And but I'm reading these because I'm wanting to stress that some of the points that he's made here. Now, this one he published on January 22nd, 2013. And I actually, before I read this, I think a lot of us, again, can, if you stop and think and look back on the past few months of your lives, you can probably relate to some of what he's saying here. He says, we have crossed many thresholds and experienced many transitions, but we are still waiting for the moment when we shed the past and enter the future we have been planning. That moment is in February. Now, what does everybody here at Renegade think about that month? Okay. We will finally begin cutting our ties to the past and pushing through whatever barriers remain. February offers confidence and determination, a willingness to overcome resistance, even resistance in high places. But February also promises to help us maneuver obstacles and negotiate our way around barriers. The future promises a continuing emphasis on personal transformation, often in the face of resistance. On another level, the power of governments and other large institutions will be scrutinized and their power limited. Power will continue to flow to Main Street and the grassroots. Now, hold on, I need to cough. Okay, hopefully I got my throat clear now. A couple other things I wanted to mention before I play these other two videos on Pluto, and again, these are very important videos, the next two that I'm going to play. I discussed death in my very first show, and there was one other thing I wanted to mention in that topic. There was an astrologer going back in the early part of the 20th century who figured out, I'm thinking I didn't talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it again if I did, who did figure out when he was going to die. He did not purchase any life insurance until he just absolutely had to, so it would kick in when he actually died. And the timing was perfect. Now, another thing I wanted to mention is I have a book, and I don't have it handy to tell you which one it was, but I had read an astrology book, and this was copyrighted in the very early 80s. And again, I didn't get into this until about 1988 or so. And honestly, I should have gotten into it earlier in life. There were several opportunities when I look back on it and think, man, I should have jumped on it then when there was this opportunity available, and I didn't. So anyway, this book that I had read was written in the very early 80s, and he had made a prediction that the Soviet Union would dissolve around 1989, 1990, and it did. Now, it wasn't too hard to predict if you think about it from an astrological standpoint, because all you really needed to know was the date approximately when the Bolshevik Revolution began, and that was very easily available to look up. and it was in Scorpio. And at that time, Pluto had not moved into Scorpio. And so it was easy to see when the Pluto would be making a conjunction to the natal sun of the chart of the Soviet Union and see what would happen. But what I, you know, what I just found interesting is, though, about the whole thing, though, is that it just confirmed to me when I read that that I needed to get into this and stay into it. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play these two videos. Play close attention to what these two people are saying, okay? Now, I think it's going to be clear after the second one that I play that the some people in this in the astrological community are becoming more aware of what is really going on. Most of them are still on the left side, and some of them are neutral. And, you know, like I'd mentioned before, in the past, astrology has always generally been on the right until the 1960s, and that's when it moved into the left, thanks to the hippie movement that was taken over by the Jews there, or pushed by the Jews, whatever the case may be, taken from previous movements. Anyway, let me go ahead and play this, and like I said, pay close attention to what is being said.
Hey everyone, this is Jim Delicali. I want to talk to you just a little bit about the planet Pluto and the influences that you can see and expect to deal with as we move forward. Pluto is a very slow-moving planet. It's the farthest of the planets that we consider in our zodiac at this time, and it transits through the zodiac or through the solar system in a 248-year cycle. Pluto came to the sign, the last Earth sign of Capricorn in 2009. And if you look at subtract 248, approximately you're going to get to 1760 when Pluto last transited the sign of Capricorn. It stayed there until 1777. I don't have to tell you much about that time and point in history, other than the fact that now that Pluto has come back to finally visit Capricorn again, we're dealing with the same type of energies. Pluto destroys anything that has been created that is not timeless. Pluto, it is death, but in death there's always rebirth. So Pluto will bring endings to things that are no longer useful in your life to then bring a beginning or bring a new or bring something that is miraculous back to you. So when all things seem lost, Pluto rears its miraculous side and brings to you then something which is life again, or renew, or anew. Now, because Pluto's in Capricorn, we got to look at all the Capricornian areas of life that fall under the reign of Capricorn, and that will include government, that will include the monetary system, that will include military, that includes real estate, it includes structures of all types. It includes systems of all types that get put in place to kind of try to keep things so-called orderly. But when Pluto comes to Capricorn, if it's not orderly for the masses, then Pluto destroys. I've been talking to this energy since 2006, 2007, seeing what was coming. And it's way more than I even imagined. What happens with Pluto is it always deals kind of subtly at first, under the radar screen, so to speak. So it's tough to pick up. And the revelations from Pluto end up being extreme, because sometimes Pluto will hide how it's going to emerge. Pluto rules from beneath the surface, and then it'll rise as it needs to awaken the individual, awaken the soul. So if you're very in touch with who you are, Pluto is very subtle and you pick up on the energies and hopefully don't have to deal with extreme events. If you're not in touch with your soul, or if you're having struggling and are disconnected in any way, shape, or form, Pluto then emerges with some violent kind of ugliness, which is what we're seeing on a grand scale planetary-wise. Pluto likes to deal with hidden. We're dealing with a lot of hidden things right now. Information that's being given is not being given completely. Information that's being given is being changed. This is all Pluto. They want to, Pluto likes to mix it up, try to confuse it. So as events emerge, as time passes, if you start doing the work, you have to do work when Pluto's involved, and you start digging and discovering and researching, you start finding out your answers. This is what's going on. That's why the masses are awakening. Pluto rules on a grand scale. Remember that always. Because it's the last of the energetic fields that we deal with in our solar system, it's the message, I believe, from the universe in its most direct form. So the universe is screaming at us to wake up. This life that we've led up to this point is not sustainable. There's something more. There's a miracle on the horizon, and we've got to go get it. So think about this, because Pluto's going to be in Capricorn until approximately 2024. We've got a lot of time here, but we are in the heart of it. We're at 7 degrees Capricorn right now, and we are being asked to step up, go after that which our soul desires, or which our soul is trying to guide us to. Wake up to who you are. You can tap into powers that are 100 times of what you could imagine them being, maybe even 1,000 times. So Pluto has that strength. It's that energy that when all seems lost, the miracle or faith or a belief system emerges that carries us and catapults us up and away from that. We're in that energy. And there has never been a time in society with all the planets squaring in opposition to each other, and Pluto and Capricorn, there's never been a time, in my opinion, that we cannot move or that we are stuck. There's never been a time that we can take more action than now. So we're not stuck. What we got to do is we got to get back into our soul, know who we are, and let that guide us into where we're going. This is going to be so important because it's up to us to continue mankind. And I believe when Pluto goes into Capricorn, this is for at least a 248-year cycle. So how do you want your children and grandchildren to go on? What kind of life do you want for them? What do you want them to believe in? You know, what do you want for them? That's what we're looking for right now. And if the motivation is that, you know, you don't have children and you don't have grandchildren, but the motivation then would be for you, then what do you want? Because there's never been a better time to step up. There appears to be Pluto loves fear. So if you think that you'll be undermined or you have fear that, hey, you can't stand up, we've all got to, from the inside out, follow our soul and stand up for what it is we know and believe can come of where we are. We know we can't continue in this path. Pluto's showing us that. It's going to continue to show us that. It's going to seem destitute at times. That's what Pluto does. So when you wake up and see that there's no chance or no opportunity, Pluto will give us an opportunity. You just got to get in touch with who you are. There's a lot of changes. You totally overhaul yourself when Pluto goes into an important point or an important sign. And Capricorn is an important sign. It's how we understand the physicalness of life. So as Pluto's here, we're going to get to a deeper level, a deeper understanding of how and what things are. Any questions about this, please email me here at the YouTube channel or ypie2012.com, ypie2012.com. I'll be more than happy to answer your questions. This is the awakening. This is the prelude to 2012. We're in it. We are slap in the middle of it. So let's go. We need you more than ever. And again, I'm doing my part. Come on. You know, I'm side by side with you. So let's get after it.
Okay, he sounds like he knows what's going on, doesn't he? I don't know where his political stance is, but I think he's grasping what's happening here. Now, I'm going to play this next one, and this one is going to convey a very similar message, but a little bit more overt in other ways. So give this one a listen, and again, pay close attention to what is being said. Thank you.
Pluto directs in Capricorn, the dissolution of reality and catalyzing of change. Pluto, the cosmic power broker, moves forward on September 16th, bringing forth more reveals about the extent of reform necessary for humankind to move into alignment. His sojourn through Capricorn, which began in 2008, will continue through 2024 and will decimate all institutions, governments, and nations not operating in integrity, hence pretty much the entire Western world. As Pluto reveals the dark side of the sign, we will see more intensely the way that power corrupts and that our current economic and political systems are based on false premises rather than natural law. For Americans and Brits, who not only share a common lineage, but also a twinship concerning astrology as they both have strong Capricorn placements, this will mean a total 180 in terms of policy and values. In our last segment, we mentioned that the U.S. is now entering its eighth Saturn return. While Saturn is a rancorous curmudgeon, he is a lightweight when compared to the strength and effects of Pluto, the devil shadow destroyer incarnate, and as we approach the late 20-teens, we will meet our shadow full-blown as we go through our country's first Pluto return of 250 years. With Saturn, we have our hands slapped and get depressed. With Pluto, it's a full-blown soul-whipping and harder than weaning oneself off heroin. The phrase bandied about in astrology circles is, with Pluto, you feel like dying, but you're not lucky enough to die. So, as we can imagine, it's going to be a difficult transition for most Americans or believers in the American narcoleptic dream. And right now, we are still in the preliminary stages, as Pluto has been acting as a free agent or dredging up the past in his two-step with Saturn. The crossroads we've all been waiting for, courtesy of Pluto square Uranus, are not yet fully upon us and will begin in earnest in 2012 and continue through 2015. For spiritualists, it's the age of enlightenment. For rapturists, it's the end of times. And for those in between, it's just going to feel like the life as you know it is over. And while preceding the actual ingress of Pluto into Capricorn, the tragic events of 9/11 bred the seeds of disillusionment and paradigm shifting. The chart of the event 10 years ago does connect to the current Plutonian cycle and is the canary in the mine. While flagrantly catastrophic, it is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of revealing the lengths to which those in power will go to control and manipulate the public. And while conspiracy theories around the bombing have circulated for years, it is likely that the real truth will be exhumed and acknowledged for the next decade, and this will set in motion a massive mainstream backlash against the government and its fabricated war machine. The world's a stage, and some horrifying illusions have been foisted on the public throughout America's history, and as we approach our Pluto return in 2020, there will be no place for the guilty perpetrators to hide. In mythology, Pluto is most closely aligned with the Greek gods Hades and Dionysus, and Hindu deities Shakti and Kali, where death and destruction give birth to new life. So when filtered through the sign of Capricorn, Pluto will decimate the calcified and corrupt forms of the so-called establishment, Capricorn, to make way for a more flexible, fluid, inclusive model of world governance. But enough with the pretty metaphors. How will this play out over the next 13 years? Continuing financial decline, 2008 was just the beginning. Crumbling infrastructure, redefining of educational institutions, even more extreme climate change due to industrialization, and the fracturing of society into those who are awake and those who are asleep. In addition to the U.S. and Britain, other countries also affected by Pluto and Capricorn are China, India, Afghanistan, New Zealand, the Vatican, and the sovereign nation of New York City. Long term, we are looking at nothing more, nothing less than a total reconstitution of our reality as the truth of the fiction of the American dream becomes even more glaringly clear. For many of us, on a personal or professional level, long-standing issues will come to a head, and we will choose or be forced to make significant changes in our lives. This is particularly true if you have an angle or personal planet at the early degrees of Capricorn, Cancer, Libra, or Aries. Whatever happens has been brewing underneath the surface for a very long time, and the combination of cosmic forces now make it impossible to ignore. It is time to take back your projections and step into the authorship of your own life. Hold on to your hats, it's going to be a bumpy ride, is an understatement. Judging from the prequel, we ain't seen nothing yet. Despite the serious nature of this episode, it's not all doom and gloom up ahead. astrology is one of the many tools that can help us understand and navigate the current times. In future episodes, we will continue to intersperse global trends with more individual concerns. Please show your support by rating, commenting, or subscribing to this YouTube channel. Thanks for watching.
Well, that said a lot, didn't it? I don't think I actually have to elaborate much further on what she just said. That was pretty crystal clear. And by the way, she was associated with the quantum astrology people. And that was directly from the people who did the video that I've been pushing. So anyway, I'm going to play another song and we'll be right back.
I'm not afraid to die.
Okay, I'm back. I hope everybody enjoyed that. That's a song from the early 70s by Gary Wright. What I wanted to get into next is the planet Neptune. So far, we've mainly been discussing Uranus and Pluto, and they certainly are going to be the biggest players, in what is to come ahead. However, we can't neglect the planet Neptune, which is also one of the other outer planets. See, the outer planets are the ones that affect mass consciousness on a grand scale, and all of the other inner planets are more personal, and they do have their role in the big picture, but it's less so on a daily basis. And it whenever there is contact between the outers and the inners in a personal chart, that's when things in your personal life become significantly more active. And, of course, if a large group of people have, say, people born near the same time may all have their Mars in a similar location in their chart, well, then all of those people are, you know, thusly affected. But what I wanted to mention about Neptune is that, you know, if you have caught my first show, Neptune is about delusion, confusion. It's also, of course, about spirituality. It's also about confinement. And it is a very nebulous planet in its effects. And Neptune transits are the arbiter of confusion. Now, in society, one of the things that Neptune rules, other than things like water and oil and liquids, you know, of all types, rivers, and so, lakes, so on and so forth, anything liquid, Neptune rules. One of the things that Neptune does rule is pop culture. Now, as we know, if you listen to my show on Hollywood, you know darn well who runs things there. And so Neptune is entering into its home sign of Pisces. And there it is most at home, and it has entered in there into Pisces, I think it was maybe sometime towards the middle of last year approximately. And Neptune stays in each sign approximately 14 years. Its cycle around the zodiac is about 156 years. And, you know, no one will experience a full Neptune cycle in their lifetime. You know, like, whereas, you know, Uranus, is the cycle is 84. Some people get to live that long, others don't. And those who do get to make it to 84 and beyond are the sort of have a rebirth in life. And what I want to emphasize, though, again, is that because Neptune is in its home sign during the course of the next, say, 12 to 13 years, which are very important, obviously, if you've been following what's going on with Pluto and Uranus, then based on what I just said, you can understand how that Neptune is going to be used to deceive the masses, and any sort of transformation or change that will occur, they are going to definitely attempt to distort it. So what I've got here is one video that I'm going to play the audio on that's about 10 minutes long by a very good astrologer, and I'll let him give you his take on Neptune in general. I don't think he's going to say anything that's truly outstanding like what you just heard, but it will give you an idea in general about the planet Neptune and what it does control. So without further ado.
Neptune entered Pisces in early April of 2011, and it remains there into the first part of August of 11. It retreats briefly into Aquarius, and then in February of 2012, it re-enters Pisces solidly and will remain there until 2025 and 2026, when it again crisscrosses over a sign frontier on its way out of Pisces and into Aries. So we have a decade and a half or so ahead of us, characterized by an extraordinary boost of Neptunian energy that will affect all of humanity in dramatic and radical ways. I intend to prove that to you in the next few minutes. The cycle of Neptune's orbit around the Sun is 165 years. So its entry into any sign is a big deal. But there is no sign in which Neptune is more powerful than when it passes into Pisces. It rules Pisces, which simply means Neptune and Pisces are similar in their natures. They both refer to humanity's capacity to sense a larger framework around the universe, a sense of other dimensions. You might say, in the language of Star Wars, humanity's capacity to feel the Force is a Neptunian and Piscean kind of thing. And when these two come together, it gets more powerful. Essentially, what we have here, rather reliably, as history will indicate, is a general boosting of human sensitivity and hunger and need to experience the transcendent. I would like to illustrate this. Neptune crossing into Pisces coincided with the journeys of the Christian evangelist St. Paul to the seven churches of Asia. If you grew up in a Christian tradition, you would recognize essentially, this is the story of the New Testament of the Bible outside of the Gospels. And here we have a situation where the indigenous religions, the essentially Roman religions and Roman mythology, as we've come to understand it now, was losing its hold on people. People were ready for something new. There was a sense of the deadness of the old structures. And along comes the Christian message, and people were receptive to it. Neptune in Pisces throughout that period, correlating with this hunger. So in that one simple image, we see the whole thing, that old religious structures tend to become stale. It's a commonplace observation that a great teacher, a spiritual teacher, comes onto the earth, and there's this visitation of energy beyond all imagining, and the sense of spiritual excitement and so on. And then schools of theology form and bureaucracies form, and intellectuals argue about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. And pretty soon the whole thing collapses into rigidity, intellectualism, and emptiness. And humanity is ready for something new. We have a spiritual need, and it is not fed by these old dead religious structures. This seems to be the situation that exists when Neptune enters Pisces. And again, the journeys of St. Paul illustrated the incredible wildfire spread of the Christian faith in that relatively brief period of time. Going further, we have the introduction of Buddhism into Korea. A cycle later, the introduction of Buddhism into Japan. I'll spare you the details, but essentially the same story. The coming of St. David to Wales, if you pay any attention to Welsh history. I know most people don't, but this is the beginning of Christianity in Wales. Again, the old pagan religion simply losing its hold, losing its grasp on people. One of the most dramatic expressions of Neptune's passage through Pisces was the explosion of the Islamic religion, essentially from Spain to all across Asia in a period of about a decade and a half, coinciding with Neptune in Pisces. Once again, people were ready. Their consciousness turned to new metaphors for the transcendent or the invisible or the divine. In all of this, I'm trying to speak phenomenologically, not to approve or disapprove or generally insert my ego's opinions into any of this, but simply to observe that human consciousness turns to spiritual matters or transcendent matters or that which will give meaning to life during this time. We have the phenomenon of Martin Luther nailing his famous 99 theses to the church door in Wittenberg in the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, as the Catholic religion of that time had grown stale and stable and dead, and people were ready for some new visitation of energy, Neptune crossing into Pisces, and boom, the Protestant Reformation explodes across Europe because we were ready. The last time Neptune was in Pisces, in the middle of the 19th century, we had a phenomenon that seems to be a little bit further afield, but if we reflect on it, we will see exactly the same thing. It was essentially the beginning of Marxism, the roots of communism, which became a religion as people became tired of the capitalist structures and so on, and the great new belief system and the faith of Marxism spread across Europe. This is a little bit curious in that in many ways Marxism was anti-religious, and yet it doesn't take too much imagination to recognize that many Marxists were quite religious in their worship of that system and their adherence to it, complete with its various gods and holy books. It's the same kind of thing. So here we have Neptune crossing into Pisces again, and we would look at the world now and recognize the sense of us being crippled or shackled by dead theologies, structures that only seem to lead to division and argument. And humanity is ready for, again, a new visitation of energy. As this occurs, I want to be very careful not to predict that we will have the beginning of an age of peace, love, and understanding in which we have Britney Spears clean and sober and Dick Cheney meditating and various other unlikely possibilities. I think it's better to say that you will meditate 5% more in 2013 than you did in 2010. It's silly for me to make up a number, and what I am saying may not apply directly to you. But across the board, in principle, that's an approximately correct statement, that you will meditate 5% more. And now we start thinking about what that might mean in the collective if essentially everyone spends 5% more time experiencing magic or transcendence. What kind of wave does that set up in the collective? I am picturing a vicious drug dealer on the U.S.-Mexican border who gazes up into the heavens on a starry night with a feeling of rapture and wonder for 30 seconds and then goes back to his nefarious work. I picture a neo-Nazi skinhead punching the dials on the radio and by mistake hitting the classical musical station and being uplifted for 2 minutes and transfixed by the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. I'm using images of crude, hard human beings, but recognizing in the words of William Butler Yeats that there is not a soul that lacks a sweet crystalline cry. And the sweet crystalline cry that exists in each one of us is about to get a great boost. And I feel that we are on the cusp of a spiritual renaissance. Now, as I say that, it could seem hyperbolic. The spread of Islam, the spread of Christianity, the spread of Buddhism, these were spiritual renaissances within the logic of their times and cultures. And that dial of the clock, so to speak, or that hand on the dial, has come round again. Humanity is ready for it, and over the next 15 years, we will be swept along by the currents of spiritual revolution. It has worked in the past. There is no reason to think it will not work now.
Okay, and that was very interesting to say the least. And what I envision is that they're going to try to revive Christianity. They know it's on its last leg. They want it to continue until they're ready to bring in communism full force. And Christianity is very important to that. And what we have to do, and we obviously have our work cut out for us, is that we have to continue to discredit Christianity from every angle possible and through every way and method possible. And we also have to try to introduce to as many people as we can spirituality. And we have to, we don't have a choice, because they are going to play the Christian card. That is my personal opinion. Now, I want to get into Saturn here. And just a couple of minutes, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play a short tune here real quick, and we'll be right back.
There are stars in the sun.
Find a lot of it on the net, but I do think it's important, and I may bring Saturn up again on my show on Sunday. Again, if you didn't catch it, I'm going to go ahead and do a fourth astrology show on Sunday, and I think I'm mainly going to continue with the audio clips tonight, and I'll do a little bit of reading on Sunday, and then also do some more. I'm not through. I've got some more stuff in store for everybody to hear. I have some other astrologers that are I want people to hear their comments on that are related to these same topics. So anyway, right now I've got a little short clip that somebody did. If you recall what I said earlier in the show about the Tool song, it was about the cycle of Saturn. Now, they took this song, though. They took that, the other one was The Grudge. This one is Schism. And they, this is just like a minute, 40 seconds or something like that. And somebody on YouTube had had done this, and I thought it was rather interesting. They took part of Schism, put some animation to it, and they made a reference to Saturn regarding that. It's mainly at the end of this little clip. And also, too, I don't know if everyone is aware of it, there is a band called Saturn Ascending who plays Tool, I guess, in local bars. So anyway, let me go ahead and play this. Typically consist of three Saturn cycles, and that's, you know, approximately, it lines up approximately with the 84-year cycle of Uranus. And speaking of which, I made a comment in my first show that I want to correct. I had said that the distances between the planets, such as, for example, Neptune is twice the distance of Uranus. Uranus is twice the distance of Saturn. Saturn would be twice the distance of Jupiter. Jupiter would be twice the distance of Mars. Okay, well, Jupiter is not twice the distance of Mars. The asteroid belt is twice the distance of Mars. And then Jupiter is twice the distance to the asteroid belt. So, therefore, the asteroid belt does represent some sort of a planet that used to be in that orbit. I've got a cough. Hold on. Okay. And so anyway, the Saturn of cycle, the cycle of Saturn is rather interesting. It in this cycle, you can take the chart and divide it, align vertically and align horizontally, and get four quadrants. And again, those are the four seasons. And each cycle of Saturn goes through each one of those quadrants or seasons, so to speak, about once every 7 years. And that will correlate to the cycle of Uranus being in one sign. as it takes approximately 7 years to transit each sign. And ironically, like I said, Neptune is 14 years, which is twice the time. So you can see how one half cycle of Saturn would then equal one transit of Neptune through one sign as well. And generally, the bottom of the chart is the fourth house. That is your probably the most personal point. That's your home. And at the top, that is your most public. And the Saturn will go through each of these quadrants and each of the signs and will make aspects to all of the natal planets. And during these transits of Saturn, you have challenges. Now, the Saturn is not as powerful as Pluto, but you do feel Saturn. There's no way of not feeling Saturn. Now, every once in a while with Saturn, unlike Pluto, you can skip steps. In other words, did you need to learn something but disregarded it and put it off till later? Well, if you did, it'll catch up to you the next seven-year period when Saturn gets around to the next aspect of that lesson or that planet that was being aspected. And so that's the other thing about Saturn that I want to mention. This has to do with transits, and I just want to bring up transits in general. The outer planet transits from Uranus outward will always involve a three-step process. There is a first contact, and then the transiting planet will make a station and then go retrograde, and it moves slower during retrograde. And then it will contact or will make another aspect again to that same set of circumstances. And then it will go stationary and then go direct again and then go back to full speed and then pass over that point again. And so there's always a three-step process with the outer planets. Now, that's not necessarily true with Saturn. Usually it is, but not always. Saturn can sometimes bring simply a two-step process. However, the two-step process seems to be a little bit more intense because the two-step process means that it goes past that point, it makes contact, goes past, comes back, and then it stops and goes stationary and sits there and rubs it in. And you, at that point, you really feel it. And then it will move forward again. So take your pick. Now, usually the three-step process will bring up an issue the first time it makes a contact or an aspect. And then it'll be some sort of a challenge that you have to deal with. And then the planet will go retrograde and come back, and it will move slower. And when it does, whatever that situation is will become more intense. And then it will move forward again after it goes direct and cross. And usually you're so sick of the situation that you just give in to whatever set of circumstances it is and make the necessary changes. Now, those are the stressful aspects. There are positive aspects to all of these planets as well. It's not all doom and gloom. The sextile is a 60-degree aspect. Then there's a semi-sextile, which is sometimes hardly noticeable at 30. But the best aspects will usually involve either a trine at 120 degrees or a conjunction. And a conjunction is usually considered neutral. A conjunction is when the planet has made its way around and come back and contacted again. However, when it comes to Saturn, that's usually not always the case about it being non-stressful. Now, it doesn't mean it's all bad. There usually is some good in the Saturn return, okay? But there's usually going to be some stressful situations as well. And the Saturn return will usually always involve something regarding your career because Saturn rules Capricorn. Capricorn rules the 10th house. The 10th house is your house of public standing, and your career falls into the category of public standing. So, therefore, you will certainly experience some sort of issue with your career, and if you've been doing things properly, it will be usually something good. It may be a new job offer, a promotion, better pay. It depends just on exactly the nature of the house and the sign that Saturn is in when it makes this return. And many, I know many of you people listening right now are either coming near your first Saturn return or are in your first Saturn return or have recently experienced your Saturn return. Now, there are some in this audience as well who are a little bit older than me. I know this to be a fact because I've received emails from you. And so you have already had your second Saturn return. Now, I have not had my second Saturn return yet. I will say that it's coming sometime in probably the next 6 to 7 years. Now, what I want to do here is I've got a couple of audio clips to play, and it's from the same man that you just heard regarding Neptune. And he's done some lengthier videos to two different set of circumstances, but these are like 8 to 9 minute clips of, and they're called previews of the whole. One, he talks about the first Saturn return, and the other one is about the second Saturn return. Now, I did not see one on the third Saturn return, but none of us are anywhere near that age yet. Even the ones who have had their second are not close enough. So wouldn't even bother to look it up. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play this first clip, and then I'll play the second one immediately afterwards.
So you're turning 30. Happy birthday. This is a big one for you. The planet Saturn takes about 29 and a half years to get around the sun. So when you're about to turn 30, Saturn has completed one cycle and returned to the position it occupied at the instant of your birth. This event is rather famously, if unimaginatively, called the Saturn return, or more precisely, the first Saturn return. If you keep eating your granola, you'll have another one when you're just short of 60, at about 59, the second Saturn return. And life can be understood in approximate terms as three Saturn cycles. By the time we would be coming to a third Saturn return, we would be pretty much at our 4 score and 10. Many of us make it that long. Some of us last a little bit longer. Obviously, your mileage will vary. But in essence, life is three Saturn cycles. And turning 30 means you are leaving the first cycle and entering the second one, rather obviously. These three cycles could be understood as youth and midlife and the cycle of the elder. In this video, I want to talk about the first Saturn return and how to navigate this transition as consciously and gracefully and meaningfully as you possibly can. It's critical that you do that because your happiness and well-being for the rest of your life ride upon decisions and changes that you make during this period of, let's say, a couple of years while Saturn is passing through the sign that it was in when you were born. A good professional astrologer can give you the exact dates, but for everybody, it's between the 29th and the 30th birthdays that we'll be going through this experience. Now, let me draw an analogy. When you were perhaps 12 years old, the biochemical floodgates opened up and you experienced puberty, and it changed everything in terms of your attitude towards yourself, what was important in life, your social relationships, you name it. Everything utterly, utterly altered. How could we possibly explain human sexuality to an intelligent 6-year-old, and yet what 16-year-old is immune to it? It utterly alters our perspective, and the Saturn return operates rather similarly. To understand the nature of the transition that you are facing now, I want to begin by talking about what you have accomplished so far in life. And here again, I am addressing those who are about to experience their 30th birthdays. The purpose of the first Saturn cycle, the purpose of youth, in essence, is the gathering of a vision, trying to figure out who you are, what you're going to do with your life, the purpose of youth, in a sense, is to dream. And I don't narrowly mean dreams at night, although we'll often have great formative dreams in those early years. But I mean to form the aspirations based on your identity. What kind of life do you want to live? What is your soul's purpose in the world? Would be a loftier way of saying exactly the same thing. So we plug into some common sense here. When we think of a person, let's say, of 22, a relatively young adult who has just graduated from college and been offered a stable, lucrative, but boring position in a big corporation. And this 22-year-old decides to take the position, and they're all excited about the retirement plan. Isn't that depressing, just as I say it? Let's compare this with a 22-year-old who has been offered such a position and says, I don't think I'm going to take it. Am I crazy? But I am going to go work in the Caribbean as a cocktail waiter for a year and see what develops. And, well, is that what you want to do for the rest of your life? And the person says, no. Why are you doing it? Well, just for the adventure of it. If we think of these two 22-year-olds, the one who takes the corporate position and the one who goes off to the Caribbean for a little bit of an adventure, which of these two would you prefer to have join you for dinner on the occasion of their 40th birthdays? I think for most of us, that's a pretty easy question. We have a sense that the second young adult is going to be a much more interesting dinner companion at age 40 than will the first one, because in youth, we should not pin ourselves down. We don't know who we are yet. It's not that we should be totally phobic about commitment, but we should be careful about selling our freedom down the river. The purpose of the first cycle of life is this dreaming, gathering of the great adventure of life, trying to figure out who we are, keeping our options open. I always kind of visualize a great ball of light expanding within a kind of irregularly shaped crystalline structure, like a diamond, but not quite so symmetrical. And as this balloon of light expands, it will hit some of the facets on the inside of this diamond and begin to hit its limits, begin to hit its structures. This is the metaphor I want to use. Now, with Saturn, we always think of the word limitation, which is seemingly sort of a negative word, but I don't think we should view it that way. I think through limitation, we have definition and identity. So as the great ball of the self, the great sphere of the self begins to expand within the potential shape of our adult identity, early on, it begins to hit these facets, hit these walls. So there was a time when you were maybe 2 years old, when you became aware of a limitation that would define you for the rest of your life, that would in one fell swoop eliminate half of all human experience. This was the realization that I am a little girl, or I am a little boy. You have a gender. And when you were like 2 years old or something and realized that there were boys and there were girls in the world, and I am this one, but I am not that one, the feeling that arose in you was, aha, that's something about me. I know something about myself. I am a little boy or a little girl of this race or of this ethnicity or living in this city or of this religion. In each case, there's a sense of a limit being hit and definition and the feeling of, I'm coming to know myself. But all through the first cycle, all through what you have experienced so far in your life, there's a sense of a little more space, like I haven't fully expanded to take the shape of my adult identity until we come to the Saturn return, which closes the circle of limitation, and there arises in the consciousness, here I am. This is it. I must make my stand. If we have gathered our visions with enthusiasm, if we haven't sold our freedom down the river in the first cycle of life, by the time we get to this Saturn return, we have a foundation of meaningfulness and direction in our lives, and it's time to make it real at the Saturn return. Let me enter this story in yet another way. I imagine.
Okay, I'm back, and again, that was, like I said, just a preview. And one thing about your Saturn return, you know, most adults do not consider you to be fully grown till you're about 30 anyway, and they don't really have a tendency to take you seriously. They may agree that you have something interesting to say, but they don't see you as having taken life serious yet. And there's that period there between, by the way, between 25 and your Saturn return, where Neptune makes it.